We left off last week. We were trying to put the final touches on this gezeirah, the Rabbanan. It's a very, very old gezeirah. It appears in the Mishnah about not eating meat and milk together at the same table. So this issur could be violated one of two ways. Either I'm eating meat and you're eating milk, or if I'm the only person at the table, there's milk on the table, there's green, there's cheese on the table, and I'm eating my meat. So the Mishnah pointed out that the best way to solve this problem is to make some kind of a heker. We spoke a little bit about some of the parameters of the heker, how we find civil hekerim in Hilchos Nida, that kind of an idea, that if you set up some kind of a way to remember, so that's probably going to be able to circumvent this issur. So there is a question that the Rishonim raised about this issur, about basa and gvina on the same table. Is this something that is unique to basa b'chalav, or is this something that applies to all dvarim ha'asurim? On the one hand, we find that there are certain chumras in Uchaz Basa B'cholov. We already pointed this out many times, that Chazal really, really came out hard in Basa B'cholov. And then the Rambam gave his reason why, others give other reasons why. But the bottom line is that we find many, many gezeiras in the Rambam Basa B'cholov that perhaps don't exist in other areas of Halacha. So is this one of them or not? Or should I say no, that Chazal were afraid across the board that any time there's anything that's not kosher together on the table, that could pose a problem. So that's a real shalom. That's a lachma ma'aseh shalom. People have this at work. So you're sitting down at a table, you're eating together with non-Jews, non-from people, and they're eating mamash nevelos, they're eating chazer. Am I permitted to be eating my food at the same table that somebody else is eating treif for food? If it would be bas b'chol, that would be a problem, but it's not bas b'chol, it's chazer. So should that pose a problem or not? So the shach and the siman about the sachocha, the whole discussion, we try to bring riots from some mishnah one way, some mishnah another way, back and forth and back and forth, what the din should be. The only thing that the shach says that he thinks is the double portion, I know that everybody agrees to, is that if the other person, strangely enough, if the other person is eating tray for bread, so that's a real problem. Where did this come from? Trey from Rebbe. What is the source for that? So he dug up a Gemara at the beginning of the 8th Berach of Chulin, when the Gemara is discussing the Gezeira of eating Basa B'chol at the same table. The Gemara compares this to a Shaila of eating Challah. Say, a Kohen's eating Challah, and I'm eating Chulin. So he's eating his bread that's, for me, is treif, for me, is roll. So for me, that bread is treif. So the Gemara compares it to, the Gemara has that whole discussion. So the Shach says, you see, it applies to other Yisurim. So how could somebody show him say it doesn't apply to other Yisurim? He says, no, it must be that was a chumah by bread. Why? Bread is different. Alechem v'alich adam, people, everyone eats bread. Everyone eats bread. So maybe Chazal had it in for a special gezeirah. So I'm about to think that according to this, it could be that if there's a goy sitting next to me, he's eating chazer, so that's okay. That's I'm not going to come to eat chazer. But also, b'chol, we're afraid people are going to make a mistake. They can easily come. I see a guy eating his chazer. That's not going to cause me to be chote. But if he's eating his tray for loaf of bread, so that's more chomer. So what if he's having his tray for hot dog on his bun? So it's also the bun. Very, very strange thing. So I don't know. I'm not sure how that shach plays out for us. Bizman is that. One could argue that Bizman is that. Who runs to eat bread? Other people try to avoid eating bread. So I don't know, I'm not sure what that would play out in terms of tray for bread. We don't usually have too much tray for bread anyway. We would do it with the bread, it's a kosher anyway. But if you have a goy sitting down and eating mamish tray, he's eating a piece of chazer at your table, so that's a machlokes, and we show him whether that poses a problem, whether that would be a violation of this iser. In this context, so the shach discusses what if it's a chometz, called a rash, but what if it's chometz and pesach? So I'm sitting and having my kosher pesach food, and he's sitting and having his chometz. Is that pose a problem? People that have this also. They come to the office, they're sitting and they're eating their meal on the Cholomar Pesach, and the guy next to me is sitting and having a bagel. So should that pose a problem? So when it comes to Chametz, so the Mishnah pointed out that there are two potential problems. One is this Gezerah. Maybe this Gezerah applies to Chametz on Pesach. And number two, the famous words, Chametz on Pesach, Asa B'mashu, that you're always afraid that maybe a piece of his Chametz is going to fall onto your food. So that may be another reason some Mishnah said to stay away. So the bottom line is, if you're eating, you're eating your kosher piece of food. Someone else is eating chametz. So do two things. Number one, make sure you have a heker. Put down something to remind you. And number two, try to stay as far away as possible. His food shouldn't fly into your food as well. So that's just a shrine of last week's gezeirah. Now we move to the next gezeirah in Uchaz Bas B'chalav. Something we find that Chazal made also, really a chumrah gabi chumrah, and that is the issue of milking bread or the issue of fleshing bread. So the Gemara tells us in Masechet Pesach, in Masechet Chulin, the Chazal made a special gezeirah that you're not supposed to have milchik bread. And they made a similar gezeirah, you're not supposed to have fleishik bread. Why? My high. If I make milchik bread, I'll eat with milchik. Flesh with bread, I'll eat it with flesh. Well, what's the problem? So the problem is because bread is a kind of a food that people use all the time. People use food, bread at all meals. So Chazal were concerned that if you have milchik bread, so then you're going to forget that's milchik, and you're going to end up using it to make a deli sandwich. Or if you have fleshik bread, so then you're going to end up by mistake and you make yourself a cream cheese sandwich. So therefore, mid the Rabbanon, you're not allowed to make the bread altogether. And if you make the bread, the Gemara says it's treif. That it's also mid the Rabbanon. You're not allowed to eat it mid the Rabbanon as a gezeira, lest you come to violate the isurim of eating a bas mechal together. So when it comes to making milk and bread, so the Gemara describes it pashal lo shebechalav, something that's, that you use milk in the dough. So that's understandable. What is fleshing bread exactly? How do you have chicken gravy to make you what's the case? So the Gemara describes that a person shmears an oven with meat, with fat. You have to do it. In the old days, just to stick the bread directly onto the oven. So sometimes they would have some grease on the oven. And if a person takes the bread and throws it directly, when he used to bake directly onto the oven, so then it's going to turn out that some of the grease, some of the alia is on the in the bread itself. That would be a violation of fleshing bread. For us today, we very rarely have fleshing bread. We have much more serious showers of milchik bread. So any bread that mamash literally is milchik, so that by definition is considered to be treif. So the Gemara tells us that there is an exception to this rule. It's a fascinating context that the Gemara tells us in the second parak of Maseches Pesachim. The Gemara quotes the discussion about are you allowed to make matzahs for Pesach with other liquids besides water. So there are two issues involved. Before we get to the kashrus issue, just the chametz issue. So there are two issues in terms of if you want to make baked matzahs with other ingredients besides water. One is a chametz issue, and the second one is a matzah issue. So can you be yotze in the midst of matzah with it? So it's a chisar of lechemoni. Lechemoni means it has to be a plain, simple bread. A poor person doesn't make his bread with olive oil, with honey, with grape juice. That's for rich people, other kinds of bread. A simple person just makes flour and water. So for the mitzvah of lechem oni, so it has to be dafka flour and water. Therefore, the Gemara says that on the first day of Pesach, that's the Lashek 1, first day of Pesach, you can't eat anything which has other kind of liquids in it because of concern of lechem oni. So it's an interesting Gemara. The Gemara says Yom Rishon. So Rashi and Spat says Yom Rishon doesn't really mean Yom Rishon. Yom Rishon means Laila Rishon. It means the first night because the first night is the mitzvah of Erev Toch L'Matzis. So that's when there's a din of lechem oni. You want to eat it for lunch? There's a day. Says Rashi, what's the problem? So the Rambam quotes the Gemara Kapshuta. The Rambam writes Yom Rishon. So that lets some to say, it's a famous Beis Halevi, a Chumrah, that on the first day of Pesach, there's a special mitzvah of a Zecher of Lechem Oni. It has nothing to do with the Lechem Seder. The Lechem Seder is one mitzvah. And then the first 24 hours, for us in Chutzlah, it's the first 48 hours of Pesach, so there's a mitzvah of everything has to be Lechem Oni. And if you have, for lunch on the first day of Pesach, matzah made out of other ingredients, that's a bit of this mitzvah of Lechem Oni. That's a tremendous, tremendous chiddush that some had based on this Rambam. And then it went one step further, because the Gemara says that if you have matzah mevushalas, if you have a piece of matzah, like you make a knedel, so you take matzah meal and you cook it up, make it into a matzah bowl, or you take other matzah bread, whatever, other kinds of matzah mevushalas is, so the Gemara says that you can't be yaitzeh the first night of the Seder with matzah mevushalas. So Rabbeinu Yonah writes, the reason why is because that's also not called lechem oni. Lechem oni means a plain, simple, crumbly piece of matzah. It doesn't mean a matzah bread. It doesn't mean a bowl of a soup with a knedelich. That's for rich people, not for poor people. So the Beis Halevi put together now a few statements. He says that obviously, according to the Rambam, you're not allowed to have lechem oni the entire day of Pesach. That's just a lel haseder. And anything that's cooked is automatically considered to be a lack of lechem oni, so it comes up with a strange chumrah. The chumrah is that you have to be machber on gebrachs for the first 2 days of Pesach. That's where that shita came from. There are some who have that practice. Some communities have that practice that they're not machber on gebrachs the whole week. The chassidim are machber on gebrachs. They're machber al chometz. They were afraid that the dough wasn't fully baked and then you can expose it to water and make it chometz again. So the chassidim are cheshish for that. Those who didn't believe in kebrachs, they said, we believe in kebrachs. The Gemara said, it's okay, it's at the gomor. So you don't have to, you bake your matzahs, the matzahs are burnt to the crisp, so they're not turning into chometz by being exposed to a bowl of soup. So those are the two extreme views that developed in Europe over the last couple hundred years. And then there was a minority view in the middle that said that mitamech was chometz, so the gra and the tamidei gra were all right, the whole thing is lohayot v'mayelum. But in terms of this nucha, that it's considered to be a bittel of a lechem oni, so there are those who are machbenati kebrachs. the first two first of days of Pesach. But anyway, that's the intro to this again. So then the Gemara says there's another problem. Whenever you have other ingredients mixed into the dough, that may be a concern of chametz. So that's the whole problem in the Gemara. Whether may peres machmitzin, may peres ein machmitzin, do other fruit juices and other things have the ability to make these chametz? Either they can't or they can. Maybe they do it faster, maybe they do it slow, etc. That's a level of chametz sugya. So in the middle of that whole sugya, the Gemara tells a story about Rishu ben Levi, who used to make his matzahs with milk. So the Gemara says he would tell the people in his house who were baking the matzahs, he would tell them, Yom Kama, the first day, don't make it with milk. That was the Loshek Mar Yom. So it led this Rambam's Chumra. But the rest of Pesach, it's okay, you can make the matzahs with milk. So the Gemara says, how can you make the matzahs with milk? So I'm milking bread. Matzahs like bread. So why isn't that a violation? This didn't midir Rabbanan. So the Gemara says, no. It was done in a way that the matzah was baked in a way that wasn't subject to this kuzera. So it's very unclear what that means. The Gemara says some kind of a word in Aramaic. It's a machlekes Rishonim what the word means even. So there are two different opinions in the Rishonim what the answer to that question was. How could you make matzahs or make bread in a way that's not subject to the skizera? So some Rishonim say it means you make a very, very small amount. You make them sell one roll, here's a matzahs. So if you make one, two matzahs, something a very, very small amount, that wouldn't be subject to the skizera. Why? What's the svara? So the whole idea of the skizera was that if you're going to bake loads and loads of big breads and you have them sitting around your house for a couple of days, who's going to remember that the bread was made 3 days ago with milchiks? But if you bake one little challah roll and you eat it up right away, so I know this was my milking bread. I'm having my cream cheese this morning at the bris and chutney, call it a day. This is my fleishig roll, I'm having my slice of pastrami and chutney, that's it. But if you start to have a lot of these big doughs sitting around for days on end, that's when the gezeirah is going to be violated. So that's what some Rishonim say. No, the Gemara means is that you shape the bread differently. It has that specific look to it that everybody knows. They see this, this is milk, this is flesh. They know to identify this as a milky bread, therefore there's nothing to be concerned about. How do we paskin the halacha? So in Shulchan Aruch, we paskin both are correct. Even though the Gemara's only talking about one, but misvara, both of them do make sense. And therefore, we assume that the gezeirah, the rabbanan, doesn't apply if either it's a very, very small amount, or if it's made in a mishunadik shape or something. So what does that mean practically? How does this play out for us lamaisa? So if it's a small amount, there was a further machlokes haposkim about how much is considered to be small. So the Ramah is very makel on this. The Ramah writes that if you make enough, you can finish eating it within that day. So how many? If you bake these big challahs, you make a lot of big humongous doughs, it's going to last you for a week. You're going to put half of it into the freezer. That's what the concern is. But if you're just making a small dough, you're going to eat it up within the meals of that day. So that's not a problem. So in the post, we have the further shaila. How many people are in your family? You guys, 20 people in the family. So that would be quite a large dough. So I don't, it's not clear exactly how much it is. So we end up one roll, one challah, something like that. If it's made in that way, a very, very small dough, so that technically would be permissible. What about the other kula, the kula of that has to look differently? So again, that's a separate kula. So yeah, so we accept that kula as well. So there was a big machlekes haposkim about the following shaila. If the whole idea of this kula of making it look differently is supposed to be a heker, it's supposed to remind you not to eat the dough together with other, not to eat the bread, not to eat the challah, the matzahs with other things. So when exactly is this heker going to be made? So this was a big shaila. So some poskim said the heker has to be made bishas lisha. It has to be at the time that you're kneading it and you're baking it, you're making it into a bread. It's already got to look different. What would it then be? Let's say I bake a regular normal bread, tremendous dough, regular challah, regular matzah, etc. And then a little bit later, I do something. I put a sticker on that says that this is milchik. I put on a sticker that says this is flesh. I do some kind of heker to remind me not to mix it up with other kinds of foods. So this was a big machlekes acharonim. Would that be acceptable or not? So someone would say, yeah, the heker is there. My nefkamina, when the heker was made. It was made. As long as the mice, when I sit down to eat, so then I'm not going to forget. So that would be okay. Another post can say, no, that the heker has to be done b'shas maisa. Why is that? What's the svar behind that? Because milchik bread is treif mitirabonim. Chazal made a gezeirah on it. So if I bake the milchik bread in such a way that it's a lot of bread, it's without a lot of heker, so then an issa dirabonim was just chal on it. So once the issa dirabonim was chal on it, we don't find that isurim dirabonim of kashrus fall off by putting a little sticker on something. So to quote from another area of halach, a little bit of a, the poskim quote this is a little bit of a joke. Chatichan as nevela means that hopefully we'll talk about that more next year. When the piece of bread became treif, it became osa b'derabanan, Once it becomes asa b'drabanan, so there's nothing you can do to turn the clock back. So therefore, you have to make sure that the hekmer is built in before the quote unquote isa b'drabanan kicks in. So what did the other poskim respond? Those who wanted to accept this, and this would be a great cool if you held like this. So you can make whatever you want and then just put a little sticker on it. So what was the tzad l'hakom? So apparently they held that this isa d'rabbanan is not really an isa cheftza. It's not that they made this, it's a treif of bread. It's a treif of the bread. All the ingredients are kosher. It's a gezeira, almost like a lomdus, like on the gavra, that you as a person shouldn't come to do the following, shouldn't come to make this mistake. So since there's nothing treif about the bread per se, the idea of saying that, well, it became treif, the cheftza became usur, and now there's nothing you can do to salvage it, it never became treif in the first place. It was never really a problem in the first place. Whenever there's a concern that you're going to mess up in Ruchas Bas Mechalav, you can't eat this bread. And whenever that concern doesn't exist, i.e. there's a sticker on it, so there's nothing to worry about. So that was the machlekes in the poskim. It's a very, very similar kind of a shayla. I love the shechakira. We've seen this before in Ruchas Bishlacha and Pasach, those kinds of yisurim, that Chazal instituted certain yisurim, which are really under gavra. There's really nothing wrong with this food. This food is not treif. This food is not osar. It's just that if you go ahead and eat this food, so negative repercussions could happen down the line. In the case of the milchik bread, you may come to eat this bread from now with a deli sandwich. Or in the case of the bishalach, the pasachim, you may come to marry the non-Jew. But in terms of the cheftz of the food itself, there's really nothing wrong. So if you remember, we spoke about this. There was a machlekes and rishonim. When you have a very common shal, you have a pot that was used for bishalachim by mistake. Now the question is, do you have to kasha that pot? So here after Rishonim said, yeah, of course you have to kasha the pot. It's treif. It's treifus mid the rabbanim. It's not their isa. Okay. If you have chicken and milk in your pot, you have to kasha the pot. So if you have bishalachim, you have to kasha the pot also. And the other after Rishonim said, you have to kasha the pot. Why? There's nothing treif in the pot. What's wrong with the pot? You're not, you as a person, not allowed to eat the bishalachim because if you say you're going to come to marry the goy. So you're going to marry the goy because there are blias in your pot. That's quite an extension of quite a relationship that's going to be built on a couple of bleas that we can't even find the bleas. So many Rishonim said you don't have to cash in the pots. So that's a similar kind of a shaila. So here also, this would be a test case. What's the din if you have something that was used to bake milchik bread? You bake milchik bread on this pan or something. So it's mamash. We're going to tell you have to throw out the bread. You have to cash in the pan also. Is that true? The pan also has to be kashered because it has treifus in it. So Sabacharim said, yeah, you have to kasher the pan. The same way you have to kasher the bishalachim, you have to kasher the pan. Another Acharim said, nah, you don't have to kasher the pan. There's nothing treif about the pan. It's just that you shouldn't eat the milchik bread together with the pastrami. But the pan per se is not really treif, and therefore there's no need to have to kasher it. So yesh v'yesh. There's two shalos, although they're similar, don't necessarily depend one upon the other. You can pass in one and one way, one or the other way. So when it comes to Hilchos, well, someone just called me a couple of days ago about one of these common bishalachim shalos. We have this all the time when you have a non-Jewish aid taking care of an elderly person. It is almost impossible to circumvent real bishalachim shalos. So we have to rely on a lot of different coolers in these scenarios. Rabbanim chaylim and Beis Yisroels and Avadim Shrachas. And you start to combine the Rabbanim's b'makom, you know, chaylis. And you have to start combining their different factors together. So somebody called me from Eretz Yisrael. They're trying to, they're setting up somebody to be in there, take care of an elderly parent. And they asked me about the non-Jew bringing their own pots, it could be their own stuff, and is that going to solve the bishalachim problem? The pots are going to be treif. So, according to the machmirim, the pots are going to be treif. But I told them that there's no way you're going to be able to follow the machmirim in the shal. I'm telling you in a second that you're going to be looking for all the coolers. So, you know, so there's no way to run a house with having an aid, unless there's a frum Jew who's there all the time to come turn on ovens all the time. It's not shayach. So they have to rely on certain coolers. Anyway, so depending on what you pass in one doesn't necessarily impact what you pass in the other, but the fundamental yisoda is really the same. So how do we pass the halacha mishayla? So in the case of the milchik bread, so how would we be noyeg on this milchik bread story? So years ago, it was common to see reputable hashgachas giving hashgachas on milchik bread. It was a fairly common thing. Some of the main hashgacha organizations that are prevalent that we all rely on in America today. So 50, 60 years ago, used to give hashgacha on dairy bread. What was that kula based on? So it was based on the fact that they're writing dairy on the packaging. So that's considered to be a heker. So they're relying on that kula that as long as you write dairy, as long as you write some kind of heker, because if I'm simple on something at a later point, so that would be okay. So as the years have moved on, so to the best of my knowledge, no reputable hashgachas today still give hashgacha on dairy breads. And you see the word dairy on bread, so you know one of two things. Either you know that hashgacha is no good, or you know it's not really dairy. So sometimes that's another issue. Sometimes you have, we have this in our own vod. We have, I think technically it still says the tinek bagels dairy. Does it still say that? And the feilin bagels, which one? I don't have tinek bagels anymore. I think feilin bagels, no? Feilin? I think the feilin bagels, I'm not mistaken, I think still says dairy on the store. So the bagels are not really dairy. They're just that, I forgot already what all the story is, but they're not mamish dairy. Maybe some of the stuff is dairy equipment, whatever it is. So they felt a low plug, they wrote the milchiks off. But if it would be really, really milchiks, so it would mamish be treif. So today's world, no real hashgachas given these kinds of things. For years, there was a little bit of a small window where there was a certain hashgacha that was very, very prevalent hashgacha that was known for giving on milk and bread. They had grandfather clause in from Dairis, I think from your neck of the woods, right? But they stopped that. I think they stopped that years ago. I think so. So this was always a tricky thing. I remember once I was in the dorm, where my mother once called me about a certain product from the hashgacha. So she asked me what the story was. At the time, I remember saying that the product was okay, but the hashgacha was all right. So then, as I'm about to hang up the phone, I said, by the way, what was it? She said, oh, it was just dairy bread. I said, that's the one thing that particular hashgacha was still giving hashgacha on, that was still grandfathered in, that we try not to rely on. But, so the bottom line is that whenever you have milky bread that has some kind of a heker, whatever you define a heker, either the small amount or you define it as being some kind of a baked in a different way, so that's going to be okay. So this is what set the stage for the big, big shilas that is still an issue in hashgachas today, the issue of the croissants and the issue of the English muffins is one of the oldest shilas around in the kashrus, about what exactly is the status of these kinds of things that are nishta hair. Are they considered to be subject to this iser of milchik bread or not? So the Pesach Tshuva quotes that when we speak about milchik bread can apply to pastries as well. That bread here doesn't only mean mamash hamotzi, it can be pasma v'kisden, which is also in theory hamotzi, make hamotzi sometimes on these things. So even danishes or rudeloff, things like that, could potentially be a problem of milchik bread. So the only reason why the Pesach Tshuva is willing to be meikil on a lot of these kinds of pastries is that it's not darkam v'kachti with meat. So you wouldn't make a deli sandwich on a Danish or something. So let's say on a donut. Well, donut's not really pasuk. Okay, let's say a pastry. If you had a milky pastry and it's not dark, you have to throw a slice of meat on top of it. So therefore, the gezeira wasn't made. But if not for that svara, so then just because the brachas bezoinus, that in of itself is not a mafkia, that in of itself does not solve the problem in terms of milky bread. If I'm not mistaken, I think it was Rabbi Soloveitchik who once said, when they were asking him about, I think when entomims became kosher, so I think he didn't like the school because he thought that even the possible kibbutz shouldn't have any milk pastry whatsoever. So if I'm not mistaken, he said something along the lines that when they finally gave hashgacha, all those years they gave hashgacha on entomims, so he said he thinks that entomims is treif for four reasons. So he said, first of all, he thought it was all milchik bread, and he thought it was should be machbun and pasachum, where that came from. And then he said it was chol stam, and oilek avikulam, he said it was all chadosh. So he said four different reasons why he shouldn't be eating entomim's cookies. But Levi said the other was making all four of the above. Okay, anyway, so this set the stage for what started out years ago as the English muffin controversy, and then over the years it's become the croissant controversy. So when English muffins hit the kashrus scene, the little boy Thomas English muffins, so they're milchiks. So some wanted to raise a question. Wait a second, milchik bread? Can I have a give a shkocha milchik bread? So the response at the time is that now that it's like a sibin in the bread. It's nikolay ayin. It's better than the ones who were just putting the dairy on the wrapper. He said this is really it's a real sibin. It looks different. You would never make sit down on a Shabbos table and use this for your lechem mishnah. It looks like English muffins. Everyone knows English muffins are milchiks. So that's not a bad svara. Kol zman that all English muffins in the market are milchiks. The minute that you start to have some English muffins that are parva, so then that undermines the entire svara. So the problem is that I think there are English muffins that are parva. No? Right? No. I mean, in today's world, everything has parva for allergy reasons. People, companies make things without dairy in them sometimes. So if I'm not mistaken, once that there are power for English muffins on the market, so that becomes a whole new problem. Maybe the entire kula falls by the wayside. So that was the old shiloh. So then the new shiloh that's come up in the last 30 years or so was the issues of the croissants. So croissants are made with, I think the fancy ones, the real ones, are made with butter in them. Right, so they're mamish from the So some wanted to say, no, croissants are considered to be a problem. So some wanted to first say, no, what do you mean croissants are a problem? Croissants are not really bread. They're just cake. So that's probably wrong on two fronts. First of all, croissants are probably not cake. They're probably bread. And then number two, you know they are cake. It's not necessarily going to be a solution. Because the Tshuva quotes that even things that are cake are potentially a problem. The only reason why the cakes are a mutter is because the kind of cakes that you don't put meat on them. But if you have a kind of a cake, quote unquote, you would put meat on it, so that would be a problem. So the croissants, no matter what you think about it, it's brachas. And again, we know this is a loaded question about what you think about croissants vis-a-vis brachas. This is part of the general pizza controversy and everything else controversy. When you have these kinds of doughs that are made that have some of the official possible kistin signs to them, they have other things in them, they got butter, they got flavoring, they got other things in them, or let's say a case like pizza where they have toppings and fillings, things like calzones, things like that. So they have the official makings of the possible kistin. The problem is they're eating their kviya suda, since most people eat these kinds of things as a suda, so that becomes a little bit tricky. So we spoke about this many, many times in the Hilchos Brachos aspect. In terms of Hilchos Kashrus, I'm not sure it's going to make all that much of a difference. In terms of Hilchos Kashrus, the only issue that really matters is this included in the Gezerah or not? Does it make sense to include these croissants and muffins, etc. in the Gezerah? So the Pashas and Dvarim is that it all depends on what the Olam does. So if nobody eats meat with these kinds of things, so then it would be okay. But if people do eat meat with these kinds of things, so then unless it's a real bona fide heker, that's going to pose a problem. So do people eat meat with these things or not? Do people use these things for regular meals? Well, of course they do. People put meat on croissants. The goyim, they for sure put meat on croissants. Bacon on croissants in the morning. I remember years ago when croissants first started to become popular, so I thought they were mazonas. I thought they were almost like a piece of cake. And then my mother-in-law told me that they serve them at McDonald's. And she used to bring me croissants like for once in a while as a treat. So I asked her once, do people eat them as meals? So she said that by the goyim, they always eat them, they eat it for breakfast with bacon. So I said, so that croissants are probably considered to be bread, according to those who are mocked the pizza and calzones and all that stuff is bread, because it's not kubakach in that location to eat as a meal. So then I thought croissants are mamish bread. So I think I still think I am as a, you have to wash and bench on croissants. I think the greatest raya that croissants are bread, I don't know what they're serving at the bris today, maybe you can take a look if you're interested, that if you go to the bris table, so they're always set up as the breads and then the pastries, they're always on a separate table. So the breads are always the bagels and the rolls, and if there are croissants, the croissants are always there. They're not with the rugwach, they're not with the paper, with the black and white cookies on the other table. So it's not raya brura that the caterer considers them to be bread. So the problem is, whether they're bread or not, because brachas doesn't really matter. What really matters here is, do people eat them together with meals, together with fleishchiks? The answer is probably yes. And now the question is, can they serve as a heker or not? So originally, the Hashkoch organizations used to argue that the croissants are considered to be like a heker, because everyone takes one look at a croissant, everyone knows this is a croissant, everyone knows the croissants are milchiks. That was true until a certain point, but now there are parva croissants out there. Why? Because the firm, the Hamisha companies, wanted to stop making all the croissants and the Gersha companies, so they were all Cholof Stam. So the Hamisha people wanted them, so I guess there wasn't enough of a demand for milchik ones, so they started making powerful ones. So now that there are powerful croissants, you don't know, you have no idea whether you're giving croissants. I mean, you could probably taste it and tell you one way or the other, but it could be that you're giving croissants as a powerful one, so that's exactly what the Gezerah was. I'm going to see a croissant, and I don't know whether it's fleishchiks and milchik, but I don't know what it is. I'm going to end up eating it with the wrong kind of a food. So again, Lefiani is that I don't understand how the milchik croissants are kosher. I don't understand how the English muffins are kosher, to tell you the honest truth. I defer to the great Hashkacha organizations in America who disagree. So the OU gives Hashkacha on these things, and other Hashkacha organizations assume that these are okay. I still, out of Yom HaZeh, don't really understand that. I think that the whole heker has been undermined by Bisman HaZeh by the fact that there are others that have made their power.
They also made English
muffins. Which is bad, right. So I think that's a problem. I think that throws into question the kashrus of the milchik ones, right? Yeah. The OU doesn't hold this way. I remember a couple of years ago, one of the bakeries is under a hashkacha, so they asked if they could start making, they wanted to start selling croissants. So So we deliberated all about it. Should we rely on this Gemara? Like, then they told us we're not even making our own, but getting them from an OU batch or something. To argue with. Now I have to ask you about croissants. So Kenny, I need some OU input into this. Okay. So about the croissants. So croissants, the OU, the dairy croissants are still supervised by the OU. Are still approved by the OU?
I'm not sure.
Okay. At least at a fleshy job, they don't appear, right? That's the whole idea. Right. So I think that Yesh Lahakal, you could split between the chocolate croissants, the chocolate chip ones, the chocolate ones, those, I think you could split both in terms of kashrus and in terms of it was brachas. So if in terms of it was kashrus, I don't think you have to be concerned with the quote-unquote milk bread on the chocolate croissants, because the same way that the Chuba said, you light up a cheese danish, nobody puts a slice of salami on a cheese danish, so no one's going to put a slice of salami onto a chocolate chip croissant. And for the same reason, I think it was brachas, the bracha goes down to the zomus as well, because it's the same as cake. I mean, the fact that it happens to be baked like a croissant, but it's got chocolate in it, so that ain't chabasa above the kitzik on the mizuzah. So I think that would probably be the advantage. But I did make the ha'ara before that at brisim, so they usually put the croissants with the bagels on the same table. Am I right on that? So that was my raya. That's the dino kipas, my raya from the caterers. Anyway, so Rabbi, I think we'll end a couple minutes earlier. I think we made a.
I think most people will buy par croissants. There's very few places that make dairy.
Oh, yeah? That's,
unless any of the places you're going to order from are going to be par. Oh, yeah? Unless you get like from a Costco sometimes or from. I think most of them are par.
Hamish ones, okay, could be, okay, could be. Anyway, okay, so we'll make a siyum on this part of Bas B'chalov, and to be determined. So next week, I won't be here, but next Sunday, I won't be here. The following Sunday, I hope to be here, so maybe we'll have like a special show or something, one of which we'll see what the other one's like, and then at that point, then we'll go on break for a couple weeks of the summer. Okay. We didn't finish Bas B'chalov, we just finished the siyum. Bas B'chalov. It's the start now.